Greetings, friends. Today's talk is on the Bahiya Sutta. This is another concise sutta where the Buddha teaches a very eager monk to... Sorry, my dog was distracting me. He teaches a Bahiya in a very concise way, the Dhamma. Bahiya was very concerned about impermanence and his own demise. And so I'll read from the article. The Bahiya Sutta tells the story of Bahiya. Bahiya was revered in his community as a person of great understanding. One day in seclusion, Bahiya entertained the idea of whether he was an arahant, an enlightened being, or was he lacking in some key understanding. In meditation, a female diva told him that he was not yet an arahant. In fact, his current practice did not have the qualities that could give rise to enlightenment. So, as in the Pali Canon uses metaphor often to describe mind states that we have developed, and in that time they describe those mind states with the use of metaphor. So, in this case, the diva is just a metaphor for what was arising, the doubt that was arising in Bahiya's own mind. Bahiya asked the diva, or insight arose within him, if there was one in the world who knew the way to enlightenment. So obviously, Bahiya was considering whether he was accurate in his own understanding, or was there someone that could teach him the Dhamma, teach him the truth of reality in the world. He was able to overcome his own self-referential views by accepting the fact that he possibly didn't know everything. And that's the beginning, recognizing that our current understanding is lacking, whether partially or totally, in a real grasp of reality. So using the metaphor, the diva told Bahiya of the arahant, a rightly self-awakened one who teaches his Dhamma. The Buddha was in Savatthi at the time. Bahiya immediately left to find the Buddha and learn his Dhamma. He came upon a group of monks and asked if they knew where to find the Buddha. The monks told Bahiya that the Buddha was on his alms round. Bahiya went into town and came upon the Buddha. Bahiya feared impermanence and uncertainty and was concerned that he or the Buddha may die before he received the Dhamma. The Buddha was serene and at peace. Bahiya placed himself at the Buddha's feet and asked the Buddha, "Teach me the Dhamma, awakened one. Teach me the Dhamma for my long-term welfare and lasting happiness." The Buddha replied, "This is not the time, Bahiya. I am on my alms round." Bahiya pleaded, "Awakened one, no one can know for sure the dangers there may be for you or for me. Teach me the Dhamma for my long-term welfare and lasting happiness." The Bahiya is describing there in a very clear way the effort and the intention that's really required to develop the Dhamma. We should engage with the Dhamma as if our long-term welfare and happiness depends on it, because of course it does. That's exactly what the Buddha taught. So a second time, the Buddha responded to Bahiya, "This is not the time, Bahiya. I am on my alms round." Again, Bahiya pleaded, "Awaken one. No one can know for sure the dangers there may be for you or for me. Teach me the Dhamma for my long-term welfare and lasting happiness." Finally, the Buddha relented. "I will teach you the Dhamma, Bahiya. Listen carefully to my words. Train yourself in this manner. In what is seen, there is only the seen. In what is heard, there is only the heard. In what is sensed, there is only the sensed. And what is cognized, there is only the cognized." What the Buddha is teaching Bahiya is the essence of the Dhamma, to live in the world, to be engaged in the world, but without having self-referential views. In other words, in what is seen, there is only what is seen. There's no attachment or discursive judgment about what's being seen, or no desire that what is being seen, what's occurring in our lives, be any different than it is. We're simply at peace with it because it has occurred. This is life unfolding. As an individual, when I start insisting that what I'm looking at be different, or be embellished by my own conditioned views, I'm only continuing ignorance. The Buddha continues, excuse me, This is how you should train yourself. For when for you there is only what is seen, in what is heard there is only the heard, in what is sensed there is only the sensed, and in what is cognized only the cognized. Then, Bahia, there is no you in connection with what is seen, heard, sensed, or cognized. There is no you there. So again, the Buddha is teaching Bahia very directly, very succinctly, to remove himself from the equation. In other words, to not live his life with any self-referential views at all. When the Buddha described an awakened human being, a fully mature human being, he described it very simply: released or unbound from clinging. And this directly relates to not necessarily clinging to objects or events, but clinging to self-referential views and ideas. So as life occurs, the basic practice, if we're finding an agitated mind state, is to remind ourselves, there is no me here. In what I am seeing, there is only what is seen. There's no self-referential view. In what I'm hearing, there's only what is heard. In what I'm thinking, and this really gets to the heart of the matter, in what I'm thinking are only thoughts, and there's no me involved in that thought. And that directly relates to what Kandana said when he awakened, when he heard the first teaching of the Buddha on the Four Noble Truths. And he said, all conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation. And the Buddha says, you are now Anakandana. You have gotten it. You have developed the Dhamma. In that very simple but direct and profound statement, Kandana was recognizing and acknowledging the fact that he understood that his thoughts were conditioned and they were all impermanent. And as the Buddha often referred to, they were like foam on the ocean. There is no you there. There's no reality there. Upon hearing the words of the Buddha, Bahia's mind cleared. Clinging and grasping, greed and aversion ended, and all self-referential views were extinguished. Bahia awakened. It is by being fully present with dispassionate mindfulness that we are able to truly see our attachments. So what that means, and this relates to one of the applications that the Buddha taught that we use in meditation primarily, four foundations of mindfulness, and that is to be mindful of the breath in the body that brings us into what's occurring right now and immediately interrupts conditioned thinking and ongoing ignorance. And then the Buddha taught to be mindful that feelings will arise and thoughts will arise, but to remain dispassionately mindful of feelings and thoughts, to not create any more eye-making about that through a reactive mind. Now, of course, when that happens, which it will to most of us in the beginning meditation practice, it is simply to recognize that and return our mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. And that points to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the present quality of our mind, and to understand that whatever quality of our mind that has arisen, it is also impermanent. And when we remove conceit from it, when we remove the need for anything to be different than it is, including the quality of our minds, come back to what's occurring, our minds will settle and the quality of our mind will remain at peace. So that fourth foundation of mindfulness, as we're developing the Buddha's teachings, is often recognized as an agitated mind state. But as we continue to deepen concentration, continue to apply mindfulness in its appropriate application, we will deepen our experience of a calm and peaceful mind, and ultimately we'll let go of all self-referential views, and we'll have what the Buddha described as an awakened human being, released or unbound from clinging, which means our minds will always be at peace and always at rest. So, continuing with the article, in this brief teaching, the Buddha taught Bahia to put aside all views of self arising from confused and deluded thoughts based on clinging and craving. To truly understand any problem, the problem must be observed clearly, without discriminating thought and without a view of self attached to what is observed. This includes the immediate and mundane problems of the ever-changing physical world and the individual and immediate problem of the distraction of stress and unhappiness. In Dhamma practice, as dispassionate mindfulness develops, the distraction of the physical world and the distraction of our own individual stress and unhappiness is understood as the same distraction. So I often say that the Buddha, in describing the First Noble Truth, that there is dukkha or dukkha occurs in life, could as nearly as accurately describe that as there is distraction. because it is the preoccupation with dukkha, chasing after that which makes us feel good or gives us sensory pleasure, or avoiding everything that might impinge on that pleasure or bring disappointing moments as a constant distraction. And that points directly to the meditation method that the Buddha taught and why it's used primarily for deepening concentration. Of course, concentration is the opposite of a distracted mind. And as we deepen our concentration, it also means that we are interrupting that conditioned psychological response to always create a scenario for me in every thought, word, and deed that occurs. So as we deepen our concentration, as we develop the broader framework of the Eightfold Path, we're able to recognize this ongoing process of I-making. And through that ongoing process of recognition, we can then abandon all I-making. And that, again, that's the essence of the Buddhist teachings, to recognize and abandoning the ongoing process of creating a deluded moment by including a self-referential view of the self as a permanent self, which of course is a delusion. All things are impermanent. So that's the end of today's talk. I'll give another talk next Wednesday. I see that someone has joined. I wonder who it is. If you can, enter into the chat window. I'd just like to see who you are. And if that's not possible, that's okay. Thank you for joining today. And I hope to see you next Wednesday. Peace. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.